Our scripture reading this morning is from Philippians 2, verses 5 through 11. And in the first part of the reading, it tells about the humiliation that Jesus Christ had to suffer in order to provide us with a pathway to eternity. And then the second part of the scriptures tells us of the heavenly reward that God gave to his Son for providing us with a pathway to salvation. Okay? So I think it's up there on the screen. Nope. That's okay. In your relationship with one another, think of yourself the way Jesus Christ thought of himself. Jesus Christ had equal status with God, but he did not consider using that equality to his advantage. Rather, when the time came, he set aside the privilege of his deity and he took on the status of a human servant. It was an incredibly humiliating process. Jesus did not claim special privileges. Instead, he lived a selfless, obedient life and then died a selfless, obedient death and the worst kind of a death, death by crucifixion. Therefore, because of his obedience, God exalted him to the highest place and gave him the name that is above every name, that the name of Jesus, every knee in heaven and on earth, will bow down and every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father. This is the word of the Lord. Think about it for a second. The God of all creation, who fills the entire universe with his presence, had to reduce himself down to become one of us so that we could kill him. And he had to suffer and die in complete humiliation. Now, it is not that God was humiliated, because God cannot be humiliated. But what it was what God had to do in order to save us. It was very humiliating to him. It was humiliating to his position as God, and it was humiliating to his greatness. He had to allow his name to be dragged through the mud. Why would he do that? From a human point of view, it just doesn't make any sense. And yet he did it. And he did it in such a way that can only be described as gracious disgrace. God graciously allowed us to disgrace his name. God graciously allowed us to disgrace his greatness. All because he wanted to save us so that we could live with him forever and ever. And that's what I want to talk about this morning. You know, only if we understand how big God is and how great he is and how very small and insignificant that we are can we appreciate the acts of gracious disgrace. God came down off of his throne. He downsized himself to that of a lowly blood and flesh human being. Why? So that he could tell us who he is, where he is, why he is, how he lives his life, so that we can live in eternity with him. And he had to do it by speaking to us at an intelligence level that we could understand. And then in a perfect act of obedience, he let himself be hung on a cross like a common criminal and die for the sins that we have committed against him. He was an innocent man who died the death that we guilty people deserve. Who in their right mind would do such a thing? It's not logical. It's not rational. It's nuts. Let me give you an analogy of what that might be like so that you can understand God's degree of difficulty. Now, if you've been in my study classes, you're going to remember this. Let's say, for example, that in your yard is a red anthill. Red ants are nasty little critters. And if you step on their anthill, they will be up your leg, eating you alive before you know what's happening. But let's just pretend for the moment that you personally, are the creator and the king of the red anthill. You own them. You control them. You decide if they get to live or die. However, the ants in the anthill, they don't know you. They know nothing about who you are. They know nothing about the world that you live in. All they know about life is what is contained in their little space below the surface of the earth. So how in the world are you going to explain to them who you are, how you live, and how you can save them from death? There's only one way. You've got to become one of them. You've got to become a red ant. You have to reduce yourself to that of a red ant and talk to them in a language at their intelligence level. You have to go from living here on this grand and glorious earth to living in a small, confined hole in the ground. Now, that's humiliating. Now, red ants are dumb. They can only handle about so much information. And if you try to tell those red ants who you really are and how you really live, they aren't going to believe you. They are not going to understand you. In fact, they are going to consider you insane. And if you push that envelope too far, they are going to be threatened, so threatened by you, that they are going to have to kill you. Now, that's not only humiliating, it's disgusting. But you see the analogy? Do you see the analogy? God had the same problem when he sent his son to earth. There was no way that our God could explain to us who he really is and how he really lives. But he did tell us all that we need to know, which is sufficient to save us, albeit what he shared with us is only a mere speck of his intellectual vastness. Let's go back to the anthill for just a second. One thing that would help you explain yourself to the red ants is to bring them out of the hole and let them take a glimpse of your world. Those ants would be able to see how big you are and how great you are and how powerful you are and how tiny and insignificant and weak they are. That's what God did for us. God has taken us out of our hole and given us a glimpse of his world, including who he is, how large he is, how great he is, and how powerful he is. So for the next few minutes, I'm going to kind of take you on a scientific journey of what God has shown us about his world and how great he is. Now, we know God's world is the entire universe. It was created by him and for him. But you know, God must be bigger than the universe, because in order for him to create the universe, he would have been outside the universe. So God must exist outside the universe. But because of his omnipresence, he also exists inside the universe. We, of course, have absolutely no idea what God is doing outside the universe. We've got enough problems just trying to figure out what he's doing inside the universe. But one thing that science is convinced of is this. Everything in the universe is in motion. So if you really want to see what's going on in the universe, we need to pull back the curtain on the universe and step outside the universe and stand on a stationary platform, one that is not moving, so that we can look in and see what is happening inside the universe. It would be like standing on a train platform and watching a train full of people go by, okay? They're going by at 100 miles an hour. But those people who are riding on the train, in effect, they don't know they're going 100 miles an hour. But we people out on the train platform, we see that they are. Likewise, all things in the universe do not know that they are moving at a high rate of speed. But when we stand outside on that stationary platform, we can watch as the world goes by. And what do we see? Well, we see billions, that's with a B, not million, billions of galaxies flying past us at a speed of what? 2.2 million miles per hour. Sing, there they go. And each one of those billion galaxies contains billions of stars, suns, moons, and solar systems. In fact, inside one of those galaxies, the one that we call the Milky Way, is our planet Earth. Now, we can't see it because it's moving too fast. It's too far away. But if we wanted to visit our planet, we would have to step back inside the universe and travel for the next 14 billion years at the speed of light, which is 186,000 miles per second. If you want to know how fast that is, say to yourself, second, you go 1,001. 1,001, you have just traveled 186,000 miles. And after we finally arrive at our Earth, 14 billion years later, if we could travel at the speed of light, we would see that we are but a speck of dust in the universe. And that the people on the Earth are nothing more than a speck of dust on the Earth. So what we can say is that in God's world, we are no more than a speck of dust living on a speck of dust. As you sit here this morning, our Earth is traveling with our galaxy at 2.2 million miles per hour, but that's not all. The Earth is also spinning and rotating inside the galaxy. We know this. Science has taught this to us. Our planet is what? Spinning on its axis at a speed of 1,000 miles an hour at the equator. And we know that it makes one full circle every 24 hours. Now, the interesting thing is that if you're on the North Pole, all you have to do is just turn around, the same as South Pole. But if you're at the equator, you got to be moving at 1,000 miles an hour to make your schedule. And while the Earth is spinning, it is also what? Rotating around the sun. So it's spinning and rotating around the sun, and we know that it makes a complete rotation around the sun every year, okay, at a speed of 420,000 miles per hour. So the solar system is spinning just like the Earth at 43,000 miles an hour and traveling around in an orbit at 420,000 miles an hour within that galaxy. Now, if you add up all that movement, the Earth itself, with us on board right now, we are moving through space at over 2.7 million miles an hour. That's 1,500 times faster than a speeding bullet. And science says there are billions of galaxies and stars and solar systems moving through space at that same speed in controlled harmony. It's because of the speed and gravity that everything in the universe doesn't just come tumbling down. It's like a jet airplane flying along at 600 miles an hour. As long as it keeps moving at 600 miles an hour, it can stay in the air. But if it stops, it's got a big problem. The same thing is true with our Earth. As we're traveling around at 2.7 million miles an hour, if all of a sudden, if we stay there in that air at that speed, we're okay. But if we stop, we got a real problem. But what's interesting is that as fast as we are moving, do not let those speeds concern you. because they are traveling at well below the speed limit. The speed limit in space is the speed of light traveling at 670 million miles per hour, or as I said earlier, 186,000 miles per second. Nothing that we know of is faster than the speed of light. Science measures time and space in the universe with the speed of light. For example, our sun is 93 million miles away from us, but it only takes 8 minutes for the sun's energy and light to reach the earth. So when you step outside after the service and the sunlight hits you in the face, know that it was on the sun just 8 minutes ago. We also need to look at the closest star in our galaxy besides our sun. It is a galaxy, and the closest star is the star Alpha Centauri. And it is located 300,000 times further away from us than our sun. So if you want to know how far away it is, take 300,000 times 93 million miles, and you will have a number that is beyond description. Therefore, science measures the distance in space not in terms of miles, but in terms of how long does it take for light to move from one object to the next object. And the light from the Alpha Centauri takes 4 years to get to Earth. So the light that we see when we look at that star is not current. We are seeing the light that it left there 4 years ago. It's 4 years old. Now think of the possibilities of that. Let's say God decided to shut down that star. Take it away. We would still see it in the sky for the next 4 years. And God could say to us, no, I've removed that star. And we'd say, no, there it is. I can still see it. He'd say, no, it's not there anymore. And we would have a time arguing with him. Yes, it is. I can see it. The same thing is true with all those lights out there you see at night. Many of the lights that we see in the stars at night and through the Hubble telescope are lights that are coming from stars that are billions of light years away from us. Billions of light years away from us. The question is, what is God doing out there right now, today, billions of years later? What's going on? And here's another little fascinating tidbit discovered by science. The universe is still expanding outward, away from us, at a rate of 100 million miles an hour as a result of the Big Bang theory, or at least that's what they believe. So in other words, the universe is still growing in size at the rate of 100 million miles every hour. How far can it go before it runs out of space? And if it runs out of space, then what? And by the way, why does God need any more space? Well, one more interesting observation before I bring this to a close. We have now been to the moon, and we have been able to see the planet Earth. And it is just out there hanging in space, and we are amazed by how beautiful it is. I was also surprised to see that there are people living on the Earth who are upside down. Now, don't tell me I'm wrong. I'm not dumb. I can see. If we're right side up, then those people down here at the bottom are upside down. Isn't that amazing? It's amazing that in God's world there is no upside down. How do you explain that? Well, speed and gravity, the science would tell you. But it's the greatness of God. That's how great he is. You know, silliness. I've often wondered if you dug a hole right straight down through the earth. Okay, just started digging and you dug all the way through the earth to the other side. Would you come out feet first or head first? Okay. Enough science. So what's the point of all this? The point is this. Now that we know how big God is and how great God is, why would God care about us? A speck of dust on a speck of dust. Why in the grand scheme of things would he have any interest in us at all? Why would he come to earth and reduce himself to that of a human being and suffer and die for us? Listen to the things he had to do. God had to humble himself by being born of a woman. God had to suffer the humiliation of becoming a man made of blood and flesh. God had to suffer the humiliation of rejection, even though he perfectly fulfilled all the prophecies of the promised Messiah. God had to suffer the humiliation of torture and pain at the hands of those he created. God had to suffer the humiliation of letting us kill him so that he could save us. God had to suffer the humiliation of being buried in a tomb with the intent of letting him rot. God had to suffer the humiliation of going to hell by separating himself from himself in a death that we know as the death of the soul. In our human mind, what God did for us is just plain crazy. One might say we aren't worth it, but God would say we are wrong. God would say that we are worth it. If we weren't worth it, he would have never done it. And if we say we aren't worth it, then we belittle what God has done for us. So why did he do it? We know, because he loves us, he cares for us, we matter to him, even as we sin against him, because that is what makes God, God. By his very definition, God is able to love the big things and the small things with equal compassion. His understanding and his nature is beyond our understanding and our nature. Our understanding and our nature is to say to the red ants, if you think I'm going to come down there and let you kill me so that you can live with me forever, you're nuts. But that is what God did for us. But we know that's not the end of the story. After Jesus was dead and buried, God raised him up from the dead in an act of resurrection and exalted him to the highest place in the heavens and earth. God took Jesus off the face of the earth, lifted him up, and seated him at the right hand of God the Father Almighty, and rewarded him for his service and obedience by crowning him King of Kings and Lord of Lords, by making him the sovereign ruler over all the heavens and all the earth forever. It is to him where every knee will bow and every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. It is not a matter of if you will do it. It is a matter of when we will do it. And God says for those who will do it while they are on earth, he will treat them the same way he treated Jesus. He will resurrect you from the dead, bring you up into his eternal kingdom where you will reign with him forever and ever. You know, the Apostle John paid the highest tribute to the person of Jesus Christ when he wrote these words. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning, and through him all things were made, and without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that was the light of all mankind. And the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. Or as Eugene Peterson says, he moved into the neighborhood so that we could know him. And we have seen his glory. He who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. And he still lives today. And because he lives, we live. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. I think we're going to stand, be able to sing, "How Great Is Our God."